And we're holding on Hey Ahmed Bey's the second line of the wide lines. The Gemara says, Gufa. Getting back to something we said earlier on the Amud, Chizkiah, Kori B'Tveria, Ba'abeso V'Chameisa. Chizkiah, the son of Rebchiah, used to read Megillah in Tveria on the 14th and 15th of Adar. Because he had a suffix whether that was a city that was walled from the time of Yeshua ben Nun or not. The Gemara says earlier on the Amud that Rebbe knew for a fact that it was, and therefore he leaned only on the 15th, but Chizkiah had such a suffix. So the Gemara says, how could Chizkiah have a suffix about Tveria, what its status is? In Sefer Yeshua, when it lists the territories of each of the Shevatim, and it mentions it gets over there to the territory of Shevet Naphtali, it says, the fortified cities in what became the territory of Naphtali include Hatsidim, Tser, Vachamos, Rakas, Vachinoris, those five, Vachaimelon, Rakas, Tveria. And we know, as we're going to learn further on in the Gemara, that Rakas is what's now called Tveria. So then Rakas is one of the fortified cities from the time of Yeshua ben Nun. So what's the problem? The answer is, Hainu time of Mesapele, the reason why Chizkiah had a suffix, Mishum dechad gisa shura de yama havas. Because on one side, the wall of Tveria is not an actual wall, it's just the sea. You have Tveria is by the Kinneret, is on the banks of the Kinneret. So on one side, there's no actual wall. There's just, it's protected by the sea itself. If anybody tries to invade, then they can repel them from there. So in that case, the Gemara says, Yehoch Yamayim Asapdalei. Well, in that case, then why does he have a suffix? Vade Labchoimim. Then obviously, the Vach, whoever just joined on the phone, by the way, you don't have your name listed, but good Vach as well. We're on Hey Ahmed Bey's in the wide lines. So in that case, if the problem with Tveria is that one of the walls is actually the sea coast, then what's the problem? Of course, Vade Labchoimim. Then of course that's not considered a wall. So there's no question then that Tveria is not considered for that purpose a walled city. The Tanya, as we learn in a Braisa, when the Pasuk says about the Bote Orechoma, the detail that Torah tells us that if you sell a city house in a walled city, and again walled for this purpose means walled from the time of Yeshua ben Nun, and you don't buy it back within a year, then it's cholut, it permanently belongs to the other guy, and you don't even get it back in Yertel. And the Pasuk says Asher Loi Choma, that the city has a wall. And that means it has to have an actual wall, veloy shur igar. That means not a wall of roofs, which means, in other words, Rashi says, you can have, like think of, you have here in Crown Heights, for example, you have many blocks where you have a solid row of houses, one next to the other for an entire block. So the walls of the houses themselves are effectively a wall for the city. So imagine you have a whole city surrounded by blocks of houses like that. So you would have then the walls of those houses form the wall of the city. Nevertheless, that's not considered a wall for this purpose. The Rashi points out the word igar means a roof. So it means not a wall that is made up of walls that have roofs, namely the walls of houses. And saviv, when the pasuk says ashaloi choyma saviv, so that it has a wall surrounding it, that means prat l'Tveria, means as opposed to Tveria and places like that, sheyama choymasa, where the wall on one side consists of the sea. So you see clearly that's not bate arechoyma. So what's Chizkiah's suffix? The answer is le'inin bate arechoyma le'masapdalei. Sure, as far as bate arechoyma, Chizkiah knows this braisa, so he knows that it's not considered a walled city as far as that. You sell a house in such a city, the usual rules apply, and you get it back in Yovel. Kika Mesapdala in Mikra Megillah. His question is as far as Mikra Megillah. Now, in Megillah Esther, it doesn't say anything about Choyma. It uses the expression Prozim. Okay, now you heard him about Prozim. So my Prozim or my Mukofin, Dichtivi Gabi Mikra Megillah. So when we say in the Megillah that the Prozim, the people in unwalled cities, have a certain day for celebrating Purim, and okay, it doesn't say explicitly in so many words in the Pasuk that the people in walled cities have a different day, but it says that there is a different day, and as we learned previously, it means that by elimination, we said it means that the people in the walled cities celebrate Davka on the 15th. So what do we mean by Prozim and the opposite of Prozim? Is the key factor, Mishum Dahani Miglu Vahani Loi Miglu, is the key fact that people who live in an unwalled cities, their houses are exposed to view. They're not surrounded by a wall which hides them from view. Well, Bahonami Megalia. Well, then Tveria is also exposed to view. If you're boating on the Kinneret over there and you see the city of Tveria, then you're going to see all the houses in it because there's no wall on that side closing it off. So therefore, that would make it considered a regular city. Maybe not miglu exposed, but miglu protected. The key thing is, are the houses in the city protected or not? Well, then Tveria is protected because it has the sea on one side serving as a wall. That's why Chizkiah had the suffix, and that's why he celebrated Purim on both days. So you have, as we talked about yesterday, discussion among Rishonim in places like this and other places that we're going to mention now in the Gemara, where you have such a suffix. Nowadays, you have many of the cities of Eretz Yisrael have such a suffix. Tveria, we have the special case we're describing over here. But you have a lot of cities in Eretz Yisrael where we know the original city was walled in the time of Yeshua ben Nun. But we don't know, is the modern city in the same place as the ancient one? For example, we learned on Daf Dalad, on the top, that Lud is one of the cities that's surrounded by a wall from the time of Yeshua ben Nun. Nowadays, there's a city of Lud in Eretz Yisrael, but is it in the same place? Not necessarily. In fact, many times, archaeologists have dug up what seems to be the ancient city, and it's a good half a mile or a mile away from the current one. The only one that we know for sure is still in the same location is Yerushalayim. So, with Hebron, but the vote is, so we know, of course, where Ma'aretz Machpelah is, but you think about it, the Pasuk describes that Ma'aretz Machpelah is al pnei Hebron, meaning in front of Hebron, but nowadays, Ma'aretz Machpelah is smack in the middle of the city. So therefore, lav dafka, that what we know now as Hebron, is in the same place as ancient Hebron. So what happens is, in many of those places, they do in fact lay in the Megillah on the 14th and 15th. The question then becomes, in such places, what do you do as far as a brach? Some of the Rishonim learn, for example, the Torah mentions in the name of his brother, Rabbi Yechiel, that you wouldn't make a bracha on either day in those places, because either day is going to be a suffix. How can you say a bracha? On the other hand, the Rambam says that you make a bracha on the 14th, because most of the world does read on the 14th, and that's the accepted halacha. So in such places, they lay on the 14th by night and by day with a bracha, and then they lay on the 15th again by night and by day without a bracha.
The same thing about Baghdad.
So Baghdad is a question. So B'chlau, you have a question. B'chlau, you have a discussion among Rishonim whether this whole thing about walled cities, to what we talked about at the beginning of the Masechta, how much does it necessarily apply to cities outside Eretz Yisrael? So yeah, we talked about at the very beginning of the Masechta, there was Baghdad, Istanbul, they talked about Krakow and Prague and whatever. There were a number of cities where there seemed to have been a suffix about those as well. And some of those places they lay on the 15th without a bracha. There are Rishonim who learn that the whole concept really only applies to cities in Eretz Yisrael, plus of course the city of Shushan, even though that's outside Eretz Yisrael, but that's where the Ness actually took place. Anyway, yeah. So the Gemara continues, Rav Asi kore Megillah b'Hutzel b'Arbeisar v'Chamesar. So for example, Rav Asi used to lay in Megillah in Hutzel on the 14th and the 15th, Mesapkele imokefes chemim mersi yishob enun hi yiloy, again, because you have a suffix. Ika d'Amar, another version is that Om Rav Asi, that there was no suffix, Rav Asi says, Hai Hutzel, the base Binyamin, the Hutzel of the territory of Binyamin, mokefes chemim mersi yishob, and therefore you would lay in on the 15th. Now, you actually do have, though, Tosfos, earlier in the Masechta, has the Girsa Hutzel, or not necessarily, they don't explicitly say, but it seems from the way they discuss that they don't have the word Debase Binyamin in their Girsa. And in fact, therefore, the question is, where is this Hutzel? Is it in Eretz Yisrael or is it not? The Gemara mentions in a few places a city in Bavo called Hutzel. So, or is this the Hutzel that we're talking about over here? If it is, then that shows that yes, even cities outside Eretz Yisrael, if they're walled from the time of Yeshua ben Nun, then you read on the 15th. If not, if we do have the gears of the base Binyamin, then maybe Taket means only cities in Eretz Yisrael, but not necessarily in Fort Florence. Okay. We mentioned before about Tveria. We said that in Tanakh, in Sefer Yoshua, it's called Rakas. So now the Gemara is going to digress to talk about that thing. Amar Rabbi Yochanan, not just Rakas, but several of the other cities that are mentioned in that. Several of the other cities that I mentioned in those psukim, the Gemara is going to now try to identify them. Amar Rabbi Yochanan, ki havena talia. When I was a young boy, amina milsa de she'ilna l'savaya. I said something, and I asked the elders of my time, the elder Tamar Chachamim of my time about this. Ve'ishtakach kabasi, and it turned out that what I said, what I assumed, was correct. Namely, I went through as follows. We said in that list of cities, we have Hamas, Rakas, and Kinoris. So what are all those? What are each of those cities that, what are they called in Rabbi Yochanan's times? So Hamas Zutveria. So he explained, Hamas refers to Tveria. V'lom nikra shmo Hamas. Why is it called that? Al shum Chamei Tveria, because of the hot springs of Tveria. So therefore, the place was called Hamas in the times of Tanakh. The Gemara will talk about further on why it's called Tveria in later times. Rakas zutzipori. Then Rabbi Yochanan continued, Rakas can be identified as tzipori, which is, we have it in many places in Shas. Rebbe lived there for several years. Rebbe lived there for several years, and there were many chachamim. Rabbi Yossi lived there, etc. Why is it called that? Because it's raised up like the bank of a river. Tzipori is on the top of a mountain. So therefore, like the bank of a river is higher than the riverbed, the same way Tzipori is higher than the rest of the territory around it. Then Kineres Zuginois. So the third one mentioned in that pasuk, or the last one mentioned in that pasuk, Kineres, is the place that in Rabbi Yochanan's times was called Ginoisar. By someplace near the Kineret, the Laman Nikashma Kineret. So why in the pasuk is it called Kineret? The Misiki Peira could call it the Kinori because the fruit of it is as sweet as the sound of a kinner. So the kinner is a harp or a violin or whatever. So the fruit of this place was called that. The Oruch brings another possibility that Kinori can also mean a kind of tree which was known to have very sweet fruit. So the fruits of the other trees from there were just as delicious as the fruit of a kinner tree. By the way, the Gemara mentions elsewhere. The Medrash mentions that's why the place was called Ginoisar. It's Vavonala. Ginoisar is short for Gan Sar, meaning it's a place where they had gardens that are fit for sarim, that are fit for princes. Anyway, so that was how Rabbi Yochanan identified those three cities. Omar Rava, but Rava says that doesn't work. Mi ikalamando Omar Rakas lav Tveria. How could anybody say that Rakas is not Tveria, where Rabbi Yochanan wants to say that Rakas is Tzipori and Hamas from that pasuk is Tveria? But we know not. When a person passes away, when a prominent Talmid Chacham passes away in Babel, then when they hear the news there in Eretz Yisrael, they say the Hesped as follows: Gadol hu b'Sheshach. He was great. He is great in Sheshach. Sheshach is a nickname for Babel. It's actually, you take the letters of Babel and turn them by Atbash into the word Sheshach. We actually find the Navi Yirmiyah uses that a couple of times, a couple of Mizrach in the verse against Babel, where instead of calling it outright Babel, he calls it Sheshach. Anyway, so they would say in their Hesped, this person was great in Sheshach. He was a great Talmid Chacham or Baal Maisim in Sheshach. The Shem Loi Barakas, and he has a name. He's famous in Rakas, meaning Tveria, because most of the Chachamim at the time lived in Tveria. That was the center of Jewish life in Eretz Yisrael at that time. And another example, the Chimaski Aroin Alahosam, when they bring the Aroin of somebody who passed away in Babel and they bring him to be buried in Tveria, in Eretz Yisrael, Safdi Leifafi, they make the Hesped as follows: Oy have a Sridim, you who love the Sridim, literally Sridim means remnants. So Rashi teaches it, Oy have a Yisrael, you people who love your fellow Jews. On the side of it here, it brings from the Oruch specifically that Sridim means Tamar Chachamim. The Gemara itself mentions that in other places, in Sanhedrin, for example, we have it now in Ein Yaakov that we were just learning during the week, that Sridim is a nickname for Tamar Chachamim. So you who love the Tamar Chachamim, Yoshvei Rakas, you who live in Rakas, meaning again Tveria, Suva Kablu Harugei Oimek, come out and greet those who were killed in the depths, meaning Babel, which is a very low-lying country compared to Eretz Yisrael, which is mountainous. And a third one, Samar Shah says the vote is, in other words, not killed, well, killed in the sense, min hashamayim, that they died in Babel. Mar Shah explains we have three different types over here. You have the Chachamim who passed away in Babel and are buried in Babel. That's what the first Hesped was. We just say the Shem Loi Barakas, they have a name, they have a reputation in Rakas, but they're not actually being brought here. The second group are the ones who passed away in Chutz Laaretz, and they have the S'chus to be brought to Eretz Yisrael. We were saying that these people were, so to speak, killed min hashamayim in the oimek, in the depths. They didn't have the schus in their lifetime to come to Eretz Yisrael, but at least they're coming now. And then the third one we're going to mention is Reb Zera, who grew up in Babel. Then he moved to Eretz Yisrael and lived out the rest of his life there as one of the great chachamim. And then we're going to have a third kind of hesped on him, also mentioning Rakas. Ki noch nafshe de Reb Zera. The third one is when Reb Zera passed away. Posach alayahu safdana. One of the people giving a hesped began the hesped as follows. We have to remember that these hespedim, the purpose of them is to get people to realize the enormity of what happened, that they should cry over it. So they would like to, they would use these poetic style and whatever in order to get the people to realize it and to cry. So he started off, Eretz Shinar Harav Yolda, the land of Shinar, which is Babel, conceived and gave birth. to this great Talmud Chacham Reb Zeira, Eretz Tzvi Gidla Shashuel, the beautiful land, meaning the desirable land, meaning Eretz Yisrael, raised her precious thing, because Reb Zeira eventually moved to Eretz Yisrael. Now Rakas should say, woe to me, woe to her, because she lost her precious kelim. So we see again that Rakas is Tveria. None of this fits with Sipori because there was a Jewish community in Sipori, but it wasn't nearly as big as important as the one in Tveria. So therefore, how can Rabbi Yochanan be saying that Rakas is Tziporim? Ela Omer Rabo, Rava. No, we have to re-identify as follows. Hamas Zuchame Gror, or Geder, as there's another gear. So Hamas doesn't refer to Tveria itself, but rather Chame Gror, or Chame Geder, which is, it's a place near Tveria. Even now, they have hot springs over there, they have a whole spa over there. So it's a few miles away from, Tveria. Rakas to Tveria, and Rakas itself is Tveria, like we just said. Kineres zu Ginoisa, fine. Of Rabbi Yochanan's definitions, Kineres does refer to Ginoisa. That we can accept. So, v'lomendik v'shmo Rakas, so why is Tveria called Rakas? Sha'afilu re'konin shabam malayin mitzvahs kerimin, because even the empty people, even the amiratzim in Tveria are full of mitzvahs like a pomegranate. So, in other words, the word Rakas is related to re'konin. So Marsha says, okay, where do you get the malayin mitzvahs kerimin? He says, because where do we learn b'chlal, this concept that afilu re'konin shabach malayin mitzvahs? We learn it from a pasuk in Shir HaShirim, where Hashem praises the Jewish people, kefelach harimin rakosik. Your rakosech, which the simple meaning means the temples, like the sides of your head, are like a pomegranate. So therefore, we understand that once we're saying rakas, referring to rekonin, then automatically the rest of the pasuk follows that they're Malayan mitzvahs kareem.
It brings Haruge Elmek. He says they were killed because they left Eretz Yisrael in the battle.
So okay, I don't know who says that. Marsha doesn't say they left Eretz Yisrael, just they lived there. Okay, whatever.
Rekonin means rake, doesn't it?
It means that they're empty, but we're saying they're not so empty as you think. They really are full of mitzvahs, as a pomegranate is full of seeds.
Yeah, well, so that's just the opposite. How can you say rake means empty, and on the other hand, say it's full?
Because they're empty of Torah. They haven't learned very much Torah, but they're full of mitzvahs. In particular, I think we can say, because there were so many Talmid Chachamim who lived in Tveria, inevitably, the people over there, first of all, they come into contact with the Chachamim. They learn, they're able to see what they're doing. They're able to learn from them just in the marketplace or whatever. They're doing things to help them out. You know, think of it. You know, one of the Chachamim needs a plumber or, you know, needs somebody to do some work for them. They call in one of these Amei Aretz. So, you know, they're helping. They're being shamish to the Chachamim, which is a big thing in itself. So for that reason alone, they're full of mitzvahs. We're saying they're not as full of Torah as they should be, but they are full of mitzvahs. Now, what were you saying, Yaakov?
Was it Harugi, can you say, Adam
Kiyamut Be'ohel, that a certain
person kills
himself? Maybe that they killed themselves or interred, it could be. All right, anyway. Rabbi Yumi says the other way around. So in other words, Rava or Rabba is saying that the real essential name of the place is Tveri. And it has also a name, Rakas, to tell us how great the people are, even the Pasha Yidden who live there. Rabbi Yumi says the other way around, Rakas Shema, the real name of the place is Rakas, Balamanik Shema Tveria. Why is it called Tveria? She is Shevis Tabura Shal Eretz Yisrael, because it's in the navel, like in the middle of Eretz Yisrael. Now, I mean, you look at a map of Israel nowadays, it's nowhere near the middle, it's towards the edge. But when you consider that Eretz Yisrael is really supposed to go all the way up to Nahar Pras, then yeah, Tveria comes out somewhere pretty close to the middle. Now, the fact is, history books, Lahavdil, tell us, and, Lahavdil, the Medrash in Bereshis Rabbah tells us as well, that really Tveria is named that after the Roman Emperor Tiberius. It was rebuilt and re-fortified, whatever, in his times, and so it was named in his honor. But the Gemara over here wants to find a Jewish root for it, because, for one thing, why should a city in Eretz Yisrael bear a name of a Goyish emperor? So therefore, the Gemara wants to find reasons, Alpi Torah, reasons based on Lashon Kodesh, why the city should be called that. Rava Amar, or Rabba, says Rakas Shema, another possibility. It really is named Rakas, like Rabbi Yirmiya said, but a different reason why it's called Tveria. V'lama nikra Shema Tveria, Shetova Re'iyosa, because the seeing of it is good. Meaning, in other words, Rashi says there are a lot of orchards and whatnot in it. So it's a beautiful place to look at. Actually, not Rashi. Tosfos rather says that. Shoyusham Ganes Pardesim. There are orchards and gardens over there, and therefore it's a beautiful place. Marsha says a different word because the Chachamim live there. Therefore, it's beautiful to see them getting together and learning Torah. Okay. Next, Omer Ze'era. So let's talk more about this business of identifying cities in Eretz Yisrael. Kitroin Zutziporin. There's a city that's mentioned in the territory of Zvolun called Kitroin. So that is identical with what we call nowadays Tziporin. So why is it called Tzipori? Because it sits on top of a mountain like a bird perching on top of a tree. So the Gemara says, Kitron Tzipori, how could you say that Kitron is Tzipori? Well, Kitron v'chelke shel Zvolun havoi. We know that Kitron was in the territory of Shevet Zvolun. Very appropriate, all of this. You know, we just had this week's parasha with the brachas where Yaakov is telling them which territories they're going to have in Eretz Yisrael. The psukim at the beginning of Sefer Shoftim describe how many of the Shvatim did not do such a good job getting rid of, like this, they had a mitzvah, you have to dispossess and then drive out or kill all of the Shiva Amamim that are in Eretz Yisrael, in your respective territories. But there were a number of the Shvatim, the psukim go on to say, who didn't do that. Some of them left some of the Kananim alive, and they made them pay taxes and work for them and whatever. And the upshot is that they ended up learning from those goyim, Avod Zarah, and other things, so it created lots of problems. Anyway, so among them, the Pasuk mentions that Zvulun did not dispossess the goyim who lived in Kitroin and in Nahalol. So we know that Kitroin is in the territory of Zvulun, and let's show that Tziporti can't be in the territory of Zvulun, because Zvulun Misraim al Midosav Hava, we know that Zvulun was complaining about what was given to him. Midosav, I mean the Mida, the Mazel that was given to him, Min HaShemayim, and he didn't like it. What is that? Shenema, the Pasuk says, later on in Shoftim, in Devoras Shira, Zvulun Am Cheref Nafshe Lomus, the whole Pasuk goes, Zvulun Am Cheref Nafshe Lomus, Zvulun is a people that were going on Mesiris Nev, literally Cheref Nafshe Lomus means like they scorn their own lives to die. In other words, they're willing to go on Mesiris Nefesh to fight against Sisera's army. And the Pasuk continues, Naphtali Amirom Esada, Naphtali is on the heights of the field. So Pashat Pshat, it means that Zvulun and Naphtali were among the soldiers that they gathered together to fight against Sisera, and they fought with Mesiris Nefesh. But the Gemara is understanding it differently. Zvulun Am Cheref Nafshe Lomus, where that Zvulun scorns their life and they just want to die. They can't stand what they're living with. Matam, why Mishum de Naphtali Amirom Esada? Because they have a complaint over the fact that Naphtali has the heights of the fields. Meaning, what's going on? Omer Zvulun Lefnei HaKadosh Baruch Hu means that Zvulun, Shevet Zvulun, complain to Hashem, Ribono Shel Olam. La'achai Nasata Lahem Soda Sukramim. My brothers, for example, Naphtali, you gave fields and vineyards. V'li Nasata Horim of Bois. Me, you gave mountains and hills, which are harder to cultivate. You gave them broad lands. You gave them lands in general. My territory of Eretz Yisrael is lots of sea and lots of rivers. What am I going to do with those? You have in this week's parasha, right? Zvulun Mechoyf Yamim Yishkan. He's going to live by the sea coast. And his edge is going to go all the way to Tzidon. This is along the coast. So it's not really such good land. So Marsha says, why is this mentioned specifically in Shiras Devora? Because what happened was, up till now, is how many people traveled long distance in those days? People from Shevet Zvulun didn't necessarily know what there is to be found in the other Shvatim. But now, when they're going together with Shevet Naphtali and fighting against Sisera, for the first time, they're traveling into another Shevet's territory, and they see, look at their territory compared to mine, look at Naphtali's compared to mine, then all of a sudden they start complaining. So that's why this is in the middle of that Shira. Yeah.
The Chalukah was done Alpi Adibur, also Zvulun.
Yeah, it was done Alpi Adibur, of course, but now you have. I guess the point is that in Devoda's times, 100 odd years later, 200 years later, then they're complaining.
Zvulun was doing business, and she went ships, was
needed. They still wanted to have fields and vineyards, as I was saying. Yeah. So Omalois, but Hashem tells it could also be. I mean, the Zvulun that we're talking about over here may be the original Zvulun, the son of Yaakov, that when Yaakov tells him, Zvulun, Machayf Yam Mishkan, maybe right then he's saying, I don't like the idea. Anyway, Omalois, Hashem tells him, don't you worry. Kulan Srichan Lachai de Chilazin. Remember that all of them are going to need you for the Chilazin, because the Chilazin lives in the sea and you need it for Tcheles. It's very expensive because you need a lot of the creatures in order to make even a little amount of the dye. So therefore, people are going to be doing lots of, all the rest of the Jewish people need Tcheles for Tzitzis. So therefore, they're going to be doing lots of business with you. Shenema, as the Pasuk says, in Moshe Rabbeinu's brachas to the Shevatim, he says about Zvulun, Amim how you crow, the people will call at the mountain, which Rashi mentions over there, a whole explanation about how Goyish merchants are going to come because of Zvulun, they're going to come to Yerushalayim, etc. Anyway, but the Pasuk continues that they're given the bracha, Usfune Tmunei Chol. So Sfune and Tmune are both expressions meaning hidden. Tonin of Yosef, Sfune Zechilozen. The word Sofun, besides meaning hidden, also means important. So the Sfune refers to the Chilozen, which is very important and very expensive. And Tmune Zutris, when it says concealed, means tris, which is a type of fish. Rashi and many other of the Rishonim identify it as tuna. So a lot of there's lots of tuna fish that's easily caught off the coast of Zvulun's territory, and therefore you can sell that to the other Shvatim and make a lot of money. And when the Pasuk mentions the sand, that means not just any sand, but the kind of good quality sand that you can make clear glass out of. In those times, clear glass was a very rare and expensive thing. Most of the time, it was very easy relatively to make colored glass, but clear glass was very rare. In fact, the Gemara says it disappeared or almost disappeared after the Churban. So like this, Hashem is telling Zvulun that don't you worry, you have all of these expensive and sought after things in your territory. So Zvulun says, okay, but Hashem, who's going to inform me about it? What happens, for example, other people are going to come and take the chilozen or take the sand without telling me and without paying? So then I'm not going to gain anything from it. So Hashem continues and then tells him as the pasuk, the earlier part of that pasuk that ends with Sfunei Tmunei Chol, earlier in that pasuk it says, Shom Yizbechu Zivchei Tzedek, there they will bring korbanos of righteousness, which means just like korbanos cannot be from stolen materials, simen zeh yehelach, you will have the simen. Kol ha-notum of chav lo-domim, anybody who takes the chilozen or any of these natural resources from you without paying for it, einem moyo b'prachmatish lo-klum, it won't help him in his business at all. He won't end up gaining any profit from it. So when you see that there are people who are selling chilozen dye or whatever, and they're not making any money from it, you'll know those are the people who stole it illegally from your territory, who came and poached on your territory. And the dye will lose its color or whatever it is. Marsha learns actually a little differently. He says the vote is not that Zvulun is worried that people are going to go poach it from his territory and take it illegally. He's worried about what happens, for example, as far as the chilozen in particular. People can always counterfeit it using kola ilon, using indigo, which looks very similar to tchelis. So Hashem tells him, don't you worry. Anybody who tries that is not going to be matzliach in their parnasa, and therefore, again, they won't do it anymore. They won't try it. Anyway, so we're still in the middle of trying to figure out how we know Tzipori is not part of Zvulun's territory. Now that we've established that Zvulun is complaining that he doesn't have fields and vineyards like most of the rest of Eretz Yisrael, that he has sea coast, well then, if you're going to tell me like Rava said, like Zeira said, that Kitron is Tzipori, am I Misraim Amidosa? Then what's Zvulun complaining about? Well, have you Tzipori Milsadadi for Tuba? Tzipori is a very good place. In particular, the fact that it's on top of a mountain means the air there is very pure and clear. So it's a very good climate. What's the problem? You're going to say that Zvulun's problem is that Tzipori doesn't have the Zavas Chol of Advash that you have elsewhere in Eretz Yisrael. Namely, when the Pasuk describes Eretz Yisrael, this coming week's parasha, for example, is the first time where it does it. And that's Zavas Chol Advash. So Rashi brings over here from the Gemara in Ksuvas that it means the goats eat date or eat figs off the tree. So then juice, syrup, like honey-like syrup is flowing down from the figs. The milk is flowing out of the udders of the goats. So you literally have milk flow. You literally have milk and honey flowing on the ground. So you're going to say maybe Zvulun is complaining about that, that his part of Eretz Yisrael doesn't have that.
Why would that be if it's on a mountain?
Well, maybe, in other words, maybe it's not a climate that's conducive for growing figs. Yeah, but no. I personally saw the area of Zavas Chol Advash in and the pastures around Tzipori. It was an area of 16 by 16 mil, which a mil being about a little over about half a mile, 3/5 of a mile or whatever. So you're talking, what are you talking about? You're talking about 10 miles by 10 miles. That's a substantial area. You're going to say maybe the problem is, okay, there's Zavas Chol Advash over there, but not proportionately as much as the other Shvatim have. No, I saw the Zavas Chol Vash throughout Eretz Yisrael. By the way, we have to keep in mind, these Chachamim, Reish Lakish and Rabbi Baba Chana, are living long after the Churban. The Gemara actually mentions in Ksubas that after the Churban, there was a drop in these things. These things were not as much as they were before, but in other words, there was still, in their time, there was still enough of a vestige of it that they were able to see it. So he says, I saw the Zavas Chol Vash throughout the whole Eretz Yisrael, Vahavya. And if you add it all up, if you add up all the different areas, it's the equivalent of what would be in Bavel from Bay Kuvi until Akra de Tobakni. And Rashi says that Akra is a ford in a river. So these are two landmarks that they knew of in Bavel. Esru Matavti Parasi Urka, the total length is 22 parasa, which is there's 4 mil in a parasa, so 88 mil. Oposia Shita Parasi, and the width is 6 parasa, which would be 24 mil. So now, if you take that area and divide it, and you take that area and divide it by 12, the 12 Shvatim, you'll find that proportionally, Zvulun, who has 16 by 16 mil, which is 16 by 16 is 256 square mil, proportionally, he has a lot more than the other Shvatim. So what's he complaining about? So doesn't that show that Sipori can't be in Zvulun's territory, which would mean it can't be the city of Kitzroin, which we said is? The Gemara says, no, the answer is that even so, Sada Sikram Madifalei, even though Zvulun would still have preferred to have fields and vineyards, very nice, we have Zavas Chol and Vash, but I'd still rather have fields and vineyards that we can cultivate rather than seacoast and rather than Zavas Chol and Vash area. So yes, Tzipori is part of his territory, but he wasn't satisfied with that.
Is it really up to him to decide what area is his?
No.
Right,
but he's complaining to Hashem, why'd you have to do it that way? And you find, for example, you find that that Shevet Ephraim and Manasseh came to Yoshua to complain that our territory is too small, we need more. And Yoshua explained to them that you don't. You actually have plenty of land. It's just full of forests. Clear the forests, you'll have plenty of room. But there was, you know, you could have, but they could be complaining. And, you know.
There
you have a big machlokas between Rashi and the Ramban, how it worked in terms of assigning territories to the Shvatim. The Pasuk says, that larger gets larger and smaller gets smaller. Does that mean that each Shevet's territory depends on the size of their population when they came into Eretz Yisrael? Or does it mean, I think the Ramban learns, that all of them got equal size territories? It means that some Shvatim, the individual plots assigned to individual people, are larger than they are in other Shvatim. So
not necessarily wouldn't
say. Mind you, I mean, Zvulun is one of the large, when they came into Eretz Yisrael, Zvulun was one of the large Shvatim. They numbered 60,000 and some. We're not talking about them complaining about the size of their territory, but about the quality of the land. What were we going to say, Ramesh?
Question.
Yeah.
Yeah. Regarding the size of each Shevet's territory, was that assigned by the Ebishter or it's on Yeshua's own decision?
So it was decided by Hashem, the Goyal in particular. What they had was, the Pasuk describes how they sent out commissioners to survey Eretz Yisrael and figure out the respective, and then figure out the in particular, the respective values of the land in different places in the country in order that everybody should get more or less something equal. So again, there you have a machlokes between Rashi and the Ramban, whether is it that a larger Shevet got a larger territory or territory that was worth more, or is it that all the Shvatim got territories that are of equal size or of equal value, and then some Shvatim, therefore you have the people have smaller plots than others. There's a lot to talk about. That's the rule of the Ebishter. He decided. You know what? When we get in a few years from now, Bez Hashem, we'll get to Masechta Bava Basra.
Remember everything.
And Bez Hashem, we'll talk about it in greater detail there. Right now, let's go on.
Yeah, I understand. But for the time being, the Ebishter's role was to design exactly the area or the location within the land of Israel. What was the Ebishter's role there?
That was the Ebishter's role, was to decide the area and the location. Yeah. Okay, let's go on. So that's the answer. And the Gemara says, in fact, Dekanami, in fact, you can prove that from the words of the Pasuk, that after all, that Zvolun's problem is not that they don't have Zavas Chol Vash, but that they don't have fields and vineyards. Because the complaint was that Naphtali has the heights of the fields. In other words, Naphtali has fields and I don't, and why not? So Shlami, not that proves that that's Zvolun's problem.
Only because they saw the neighbors.
So now that's the thing. Arshal says, once they saw their neighbors, then they realize what they're missing out on.
That proves what?
That shows, that's Marsha said, that proves that they're complaining about that they don't have fields like the neighboring Shvatim. And yeah, Marsha says, as we said before, particularly, why did they first realize this in the times of the Devora? Because now you have a substantial number of them that traveled into the territory of Naphtali to go join in the fight against Sisera. And therefore, for the first time, they discovered, many of them probably for the first time in their life, discovered, you know what, our land is not really like Naphtali's and like the other Shvatim.
So how does it prove it?
It proves that, therefore, that they're complaining about sodos, that they're complaining about fields, which Sipodi doesn't have because it's on the top of a mountain. And the rest of their territory, which is near the seacoast, also doesn't have it.
But Sipori is not the only area of Zvulun. There's other areas.
It's one of the central areas, and the rest of their area is mostly on the seacoast. So, therefore, they don't have sodos ukronim to the same extent as the other Shvatim. Okay.
The other Shvatim can respond. They don't have as much
Right now, Hashem gave a different answer to Zvulun. No, let's go on. If you want to discuss it later? Let's discuss it later. But right now, let's move on. Since we're talking about places in Eretz Yisrael and also places on the seacoast, so now another very important city in Eretz Yisrael that was on the seacoast was the city of Kesem. Now it is called Caesarea. So now we're going to talk about it a little bit. There's a Navur from Tzfania, one of the Treyos, so, who says that Ekron will be uprooted. Now, in the simple sense, Ekron is one of the cities of Plishtim on the southern coast of Eretz Yisrael. But he's doubting that Ekron over here in this pasuk refers to Zu Kesari Bas Edrin. This refers to Kesari, the daughter of Edrin. So we know throughout Tanakh, throughout Shas and the Drashim and all, Edrin is the Romans. So Kesari was the main city of the Romans in Eretz Yisrael. It was their main base in Eretz Yisrael. In fact, Marsha points out the word okar, which means to uproot, is the same gematria as the word kesari. So therefore, the word ekren te'okar of the pasuk can be referring to kesari. Shehi yesheves ben hacholos. That place is located among the sands. It's on the seacoast of Eretz Yisrael. Vehi hoise yosid tkuol Yisrael b'mei Yevonim. During the time when the Greeks ruled over Eretz Yisrael, it was like a nail stuck in place among Jews. In other words, it was a place where they were full of goyim who were harassing and causing trouble for the Jews. When eventually the kingdom of the Chashmonaim became powerful and defeated them, and they made it into a Jewish city, they called it the captured tower of Shir. So there's a few different gyrosois over here. Shir would mean that it was like a place where they sang. On the side of it here, it brings a gyrosa that it's supposed to be tsur, or tsur, which could mean tsur as in it's associated with tsur, the city, the city of Tyre, north of Eretz Yisrael. Or it could mean tsur, Tos v'schachna Anglia explained that it means meloshin tsurim, meloshin that they were troublesome to the Jews. Then the Oruch brings a Girsa shed, that it was a place where Shadim dwelt, maybe like after they kicked out the Goyim and the place was empty for a while, then Shadim took it over. Whatever the case, that was the case. So eventually what happened was when the Romans took over Eretz Yisrael, eventually in the next generation after that, the city of Caesarea was built over there.
Is that the same Caesarea we have now?
That's the same Caesarea more or less that you have now. You have all the Roman ruins over there and whatnot. Yeah. Because we're not saying that it was originally called Caesarea. We're saying that originally it was called something else. We don't know. When the Chashmonaim captured it, they renamed it Achidas Migdal Tzur, or Shade, or whatever. Then when it was built up as the city of Caesarea, then it was named Caesarea after the Caesars, after the Caesars of Rome. So, in fact, Megillas Tainis lists the day when they conquered it as one of the Yom Tovim of Megillas Tainis, although I don't remember what the date was. I think it was sometime in Adar, but I don't remember for sure. Anyway, Amrav Yosi Bar Chanina, my dichtiv, what does it mean, a posik? V'hasiroisi dom of mipiv, and another posik talking about what's going to be Limosa Mashiach. I will remove his blood from his mouth, talking about the goyim who are harassing the Jewish people. V'shikutzav miben shinov, I'll remove his disgusting things from between his teeth. V'nishar gam hu le'lekenu, and he will also be left in honor of Hashem. So what does that mean? V'asiroisi dam piv zebes bamya shalahem. That refers to the place where the goyim have their bamya, which means like their monuments. In particular, it means, for example, like the places where they bring korbanos, where Rashi on the pasuk mentions, either it means the place where they bring the blood of their korbanos in honor of their getchkas, or places where they spill Jewish blood. So that's that. That's dom of mitiv. Veshikutzim mibes shinav zebes gal yishalan. The disgusting things from between their teeth. That refers to the places where they were to their high places of Avodah Zarah. Bes gal yishalan means a high place. And v'nisha, so those are going to be removed. V'nisha gamhu le'lekenu, and it's going to be left for in honor of Hashem, meaning elu botik nesiyah. So botim medrashes shebe edem means that the shuls and the botim medrash that are in Edom are still going to be intact and are still going to be serving Hashem l'maisa Mashiach. So the places of Avodah Zarah and the other places that they were using for their things will be destroyed, but the shuls and the botim medrash in Rome and in all the other places in Edom will be left. And the next part, the same. The same pasuk in Zechariah continues. V'hoya ka'aluf b'Yehuda, it will be like the aluf, like the leaders of Yehuda. The ekron ki Yevusi, and ekron, which we just said before, refers to Caesarea, will be like Yevusi, where Yevusi is another name for Yerushalayim, because the people, the goyim who live there were called Yevusim. So what does that mean? Elo tautirois v'kirkasoyas sheba edrem. This refers to the tautirois and kirkasoyas that are in Edom. We'll explain in a second what those are. Shasidin, Sore Yehuda, Lalamad Behem Torah Baramim, the princes of Yehuda. So that's what it means. Aluf B'Yehuda, the leaders of Yehuda, are going to, in the future, be teaching Torah and them in public. Now, what are tautirois and kirkasoyas? So Tosfos explains, brings an explanation, and Rabbi Hananel says essentially the same thing, that it means that tautirois are places where they worship Avodah Zarah. So we're using the word tautiyos as like a derogatory term for them. It might actually be related to, there's a word in Greek, teratos, or something like that. It means a monster, a deformed creature. So maybe that would mean what Tosfos means over here, that's washing gnai. And kirkasos would be bathrooms. However, Tosfos says, what do you mean that? Lamed behem Torah b'Rabbah, you're going to teach Torah in public in such places. There's such places that need to be destroyed. No, what it b'mhed of yamein, Tosfos says, there should be ruined and destroyed, b'mhed of yamein. What it means, rather, Tosfos says, tautiyos and kirkasoyos would be places where goyim gather. In which case, it might mean, you look at the words tautiyos and kirkasoyos, they very much resemble the words theaters and circuses. So it might be, according to Tosfos' preferred explanation, that that's what the Gemara means, the goyish theaters and their circuses. Now, this gets into an interesting point where Tosfos is saying over here, as a blanket statement, that how could it be that disgusting places where they worship Avodah Zarah are going to be used to teach Torah in public? This gets into the question, are you allowed to take a place like that was used for Avodah Zarah or for other things against Torah and use it as a shul or a beis medrash? So in fact, for example, you have the Tosfos mentions this, the Ritva mentions a point that how could it be that you would be able to learn Torah in such a place? On the other hand, the Magen Avraham says, maybe it's not such a problem. After all, it's a building attached to the ground, and Mechubar Ein Neser, just because a place that was attached to the ground is used for Avodah Zarah, doesn't necessarily make it also. On the other hand, the Dogu Meiravava, which is a Pirush on Shulchan Aruch from the Noda of Yehuda, disagrees with that and says, based on the Tosfos over here, it should be completely also. And there's a huge amount of discussion about it among Achronim, about the details of this. Reb Moshe has a couple of tshuvas of it, the Tzitz Eliezer has a tshuva about it, the Minchas Yitzchok has, they all discuss the pros and cons of it.
Basically, this prophecy
One second, let's finish what we're saying before. So many of them say, in fact, one answer is that maybe the Magen Avraham, that maybe Tosfos is not saying it's actually also Tosfos to say. I can't imagine that it would be. Doesn't mean it's actually also per se. So therefore, that might be a reason for a heter for it, especially what the Magen Avraham is pointing out, that after all, they're attached to the ground. On the other hand, maybe not. Maybe Tosfos is saying it is actually flat out also, or the Ritva is saying that it's flat out also. So in fact, a number of the post-Machronim talk about that it really is questionable in halacha. So maybe, if they did it, then fine, you could be able to daven into the place, but maybe not that you should do it l'chatchila. One of the places the question came up with early on is in the 1850s, a shul opened in the Lower East Side where they bought a church and converted it into the shul, and they asked the Shoyle Meshiv and asked other rabbonim of that period, what's the halacha about it? Again, the Shoyle Meshiv was willing to be makel on it and say that maybe, again, Tosfos is not saying it's flat out also, but on the other hand, as I said, Reb Moshe and Tzitz Eliezer and all are very uncomfortable with the idea. They say even more so, sometimes you have a place, which is they rent a place temporarily to use as a shul or a beis medrash or something. Imagine, like, for example, you take, let's say, a dance hall or something and you use it for that purpose. There they say even more so, I mean, it's still staying a place of tumah afterwards. You're using it temporarily for that. How can you do that? On the other hand, again, you do have poskim that are more lenient about it. You have, you know, nowadays, for example, you have, you go to the Chabad house in Omaha. It's a converted church that they turned into the Chabad house. You go to the yeshiva in Morristown. It's a former monastery that they bought and converted into the yeshiva. So there definitely are heterim for it. And those would be examples of, if we go according to Tosis' first explanation of Bati Avodah Zarah, where you actually have that Alufa Yehuda teaching Torah in them nowadays. No, because the building itself is not Avodah Zarah. They use it for worshiping Avodah Zarah. We're not talking about an object itself that was used for Avodah Zarah. We're talking about a building in which Avodah Zarah was worshipped. You want to say something?
But the prophecy about the shuls, is it just in Eretz Israel, or it applies to Chutz
La'aretz? No, we're talking anywhere in the world. Avodah Zarah is Avodah Zarah. Okay, onward. Amr Rabbi Yitzchak, Rabbi Yitzchak says, talking further about Roman places in Eretz Israel, Leshem Zupanis, the city of Leshem, which the Pasuk describes in Yeshua and Shoftim, that Bnei Don didn't have enough room in their original territory was in the area, which is now called Gush Don, around Tel Aviv and Bnei Brak and whatever area. It wasn't enough for them. The Plishtim were occupying most of it. So they went and captured another city in the north of Eretz Israel called Leshem. That is, nowadays, Zupamias, in Rabbi Yitzchak's time, that place was called Pamias. And nowadays, it's called Banias, because the Arabs can't pronounce a pay sound. But it's one of the sources of the Yadin. Ekron Teoker, again, when we said Ekron will be uprooted, Zukesiri Bas Edom, again, as we said, this means Caesarea, the daughter of the outpost of Edom, of Rome. Shehiyos a metropolis in Shamalachim, that was the metropolis of the kings. In what sense is that? Some say it means that they would raise the people who eventually are going to be kings and emperors of Rome would be raised and educated over there. The Ikadamri, the Moikmino Malfi. Others say they would appoint the kings over there when they were appointing a new Roman emperor, then they would do the coronation ceremony there in Kesari. So further on this topic, Kesari of Yerushalayim, when it comes to Caesarea versus Yerushalayim, and if somebody tells you both of them have been destroyed, al tamin, don't believe it. If they tell you yoshvu shtei, and that both of them are settled and prosperous, al tamin, don't believe it either. But if it's one or the other, that Kesari is destroyed and Yerushalayim is flourishing, or the other way around, tamin, then you can believe that. Shenemar, as you find that the country of Tsur, which was north of Eretz Yisrael and was in those times very prosperous, says when they were very happy when the Beis Mikdash was destroyed, they said, Imola ha-charava, I will be filled up because of the destruction. And was saying the same thing as that was true of Tsur then is true of Kesari in later times. Im malei azu chareva zu, when one is full, the other one is destroyed because they're polar opposites. Kesari is the anti-Yerushalayim, and therefore you can never have that both of them are in a good way at the same time. Rav Nachman Yitzchak says you can show that from a pasuk about Yaakov and Esau. One nation will be stronger than the other. So sometimes Yaakov is stronger, sometimes Esau is stronger, but you never have that both of them are strong at the same time. Further on this
there'll be a time in history when Yaakov was stronger than Esau, Alexander. Sure.
Absolutely. There were time, for example, from the time of David HaMelech until the time of Yehoda Melech Yehoda, 8 generations, when the Jewish people ruled, when the Jewish kings ruled over Edom and then appointed governors over there. Sure, there were. Yeah.
Well, not since the time of Gaulus, anyhow.
Not since the time of Gaulus, fine. But yeah. Okay, we're not talking, but eventually there's going to be a Moshe Mashiach. Okay. V'amr Abitzchak, my dichtiv, what does it mean, a pasuk? Yuchan Rosha, let the Rosha have grace shown to him, Chanina from Shemayim, Bal Lomad Tzedek, he has not learned righteousness. So the whole pasuk goes, Yuchan Rosha Bal Lomad Tzedek, Be'eretz Nechoiches Ya'abel, in the land he's made the straight things crooked, Oval Yira, Geus Hashem, let him not see the greatness, the mightiness of Hashem. So what does this pasuk mean? It means, Oma Yitzchak, Lefnei HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Rebbeinu Shel Olam, Yuchan Esav. It means Yitzchak is asking Hashem on behalf of his son Esav, Hashem, show favor to Esav. Give him a break. Hashem tells him, how could I? Rosha, he's a Rosha. So that's Yuchan Rosha. So in other words, Yitzchak is saying Yuchan, and Hashem is saying Rosha. Yeah, but what do you want from me? He's a Rosha. Omalei Bal Lomad Tzedek. So Yitzchak says, is there nobody who can be Malamed Zchus on him? Or Marsha seems to say that it means Esav maybe never had a chance to learn Tzedek properly. Omalei, Hashem tells him, yeah, maybe. But Be'eretz Nechoiches Ya'avel, in the land, he's going to make the straight things crooked, meaning he's going to end up destroying the Eretz Yisrael and the Beis Mikdash. Amaloi, so Yitzchok says, fine, in that case, Im Kain, Bal Yudah, Geus Hashem, fine, then I agree, he should not get to see the greatness and the glory of Hashem because he did such a thing. What does a pasuk in Tilim mean? Hashem, don't give the Rosha his desires. Zmamay al tafik. Literally, in simple pshat, zmamay means like his plans. So zmamay al tafik means don't allow his plans to come out to fruition. But the Gemara is going to dash in zmamay, meloshin zamam, a muzzle that you put on an animal, or like a nose ring that you put on an animal. So zmamay al tafik yoru musela, that they shouldn't be able to lift themselves up forever. So what does it mean? Omer Yaakov, the Fnei HaKadosh Baruch Hu, means this is Yaakov davening to Hashem about Esav, Ribbono Shel Al Titen LaEsav HaRosha Tavas Libo. Don't give Esav the desire of his heart where he wants to take over everything. And when it says Zmamay Al Tofik, don't take out his Zamam, which again, we're saying a Zamam is like a nose ring that you use to be able to pull a very intractable animal around. It means Zu Germamia Shel Edrim. This refers to Germamia, which is a part of Edom, Shilmole, Hein Yotzin, if they were to go out from their place, Machriven, Kolaylam Kulay, they would destroy the entire world. Now, what is Germamia or Gramamia or whatever? Rashi just says, Shem Malchus Vina Edom. There is an explanation that it actually means, and maybe even a different Girsa, that it's not Germamia, but Germania, meaning referring to the Germans. And therefore, so this is, we see very close to our time, track of what happened when the Germans went out and nearly destroyed the whole world. So this is the Gemara saying, 2,000 years earlier, that you should realize how dangerous they are for the entire world if they're given free reign. And therefore, the Gemara is saying that Yaakov is asking Hashem, please don't allow that to happen. There are 300 crowned kings, Taga means a crown, that in Germania Shel Edom, meaning they have all their different chiefs and kings and whatnot. Meanwhile, the Romans have 365 Marzavni, which Dukasim, Rashi translates, military leaders. Every day, this group goes out against the other. In other words, every day, the Romans and the Germanians are fighting. In the fighting, one or the other of the chiefs or captains or what have you on one side or the other gets killed. And they're busy then appointing a new king. And in other words, that keeps them from going, that keeps either side. It's like there's kind of like a balance of power between them. That way it keeps either one of them from getting too powerful and destroying the whole world. You look at the Goyish history books, you'll find there were tremendous wars that the Romans fought over and over with the Germans. Eventually, the Germans got powerful enough to take over the Roman Empire, but that was after the time of the Gemara. But for a long period of time, there was kind of a stalemate between them where you had just this kind of thing. Sometimes one is winning, sometimes the other is winning, and it kept their minds off harassing the Jewish people too much. Also, Rabbi Yitzchak says, since we're talking about things that if somebody tells you such and such, don't believe them, but if they tell you such and such, believe them. Im yom lecha adam yagaiti, here's where we have the pasuk from the 12 psukim. Im yom lecha adam yagaiti v'loy matzah. See, if somebody tells you I worked hard but I wasn't able to find success, al tamin, don't believe them. Lo yagaiti, if he tells you I didn't work hard or matzasi and I was able to find success, also al tamin. Yagaiti or matzasi, if he tells you I worked hard and I found success, tamin, then you can believe him. However, so when the kids say it in the 12 psukim, they stop there. But now we need to learn there are details about that. Hanimili b'divei Torah. That applies when it comes to learning Torah, then your guide to your matzasi tam. Avo b'maso matan. But when it comes to doing business, not necessarily. A person could be your guide and still no matzasi. Siyata hum in shmaya. You need help from Hashem. There's a Gemara in Nida, actually, where it says that the Anshei Alexandria asked Rabbi Yeshua a bunch of questions, 12 questions, and one of them was, what should a person do in order to be successful in Mayasa and Miyashir? So first he tells them that you should do business honestly. They tell them many people have tried that, they weren't successful. So they say, you have to dive into the one to whom wealth belongs, to Hashem. And the Gemara says it means you need both. So that's what the Gemara is saying. The same thing over here, that just because you have the Yegiyah, you're not necessarily guaranteed success without that Tziyata Dishmaya. Ula Divrei Torah, Lo Yamoran, even when it comes to Divrei Torah, when we say you're Gaiti, you're Matsasi Tamin, that's only Elul Chaduri. That's to be sharp, to be able to come up with good new ideas and questions and be able to think and be able to draw an analogy from one thing to another. There, you're Gaiti, you work hard enough from Matsasi. Abel, that Abel Ukne Girsa, but to keep your learning that you don't forget it, that's Yatim and Shmai. For that, you need Hashem's help. Because there you can have that person is your geya and he's not moitzer. V'amr Rabbi Yitzchok. Rabbi Yitzchok says another thing. Imra Easter Rosha Shasham Sachekasloi. If you see a Rosha that the time is smiling for him, meaning he's having a very successful time of it. Altis Goraboy, don't provoke him. Don't try to start up with him. Shenema, Altischab Amireim, as the Pasuk says, don't tischar against those who are doing bad. The word one of the meanings of literally the word tischar is related to the word chora, which means getting upset. So it means, in other words, like don't try to provoke him. Altischar, don't try to provoke the Mireim, the ones who are doing bad. Veloyoid, and not only that. Not only you shouldn't try to provoke him, you should realize Hashem may be giving him tremendous success for the time being. What he does will actually be successful. It's a different pasuk in Tehillim says about a Rosha that his ways are always working out, are always successful. Yachilu, Rashi explains, means to be successful. Not only that, even when he gets judged, min hashamayim, he sometimes comes out that Hashem favors him and allows him to continue being successful. As the same pasuk in Tehillim continues, Morim was speaking to Hashem, you, the one who are on high, mishpatecha minegdoi, your judgment seemed to be like opposite him, like far away from him. Not only that, sometimes you even have such a Rosha who gets to see his enemies be defeated. Usually throughout Tanakh, we have, not for in many places in Tehillim, for example, David asked that he should get to see the punishment of his enemies. That's usually something that a favor that Hashem grants to a tzaddik, that he should see his enemies defeated. Sometimes you have this Rosha, we're the other way around, where he ends up getting seeing his enemies defeated. Shenemar is the same pasuk until it finishes, called Sur of Yafiach Behem. All of his enemies, he blows at them. In other words, like he gives them one puff of breath and they fall down. So Moses says, Aini, is that so? That when you see such a Rosha, you should not try to tangle with him. You are allowed to provoke and start up with Roshoyim in this world. Shenemar is, you have a pasuk in Mishle. Those who abandon the Torah praise wickedness, but those who keep the Torah can start up with them. Vitanya, and in fact, we learn in a Braisa, Rav Destoy Bar Moson Omar, Mutter Leiskaris B'Rashoyim Olam Hazeh. You're allowed to provoke and to start up with Rashoyim in this world. V'im Loch Shach Odom Loimau, and if a person whispers to you and says, what about the Pasuk that Rav Yitzchak quoted, Al Tischa B'Mereim Al Tekane B'Oisa Allah, you should know, says Rav Destoy Bar Moson, Misha Libay Noikfoy Omer Kane. A person whose heart is pounding within him, meaning he's nervous because he has a virus, is going to say like that, Al Tischa B'Mereim. But if you're at Ella, what does it really mean? Al Tischa B'Mereim means Lias K'Mereim. The word Al Tischa does not mean to provoke them. It means to compete with them. Rashi brings from another pasuk where the word Tischa can mean to compete. Don't compete with them, mean Lias K'Mereim. Don't try to be like them. Don't be jealous of those who do evil, meaning Lias Ka'isa Abla. Don't be jealous of they're so successful, so I'm going to do the same things as them in order to be successful as well. But it doesn't mean not to start up with them. And in fact, you have another pasuk that expresses the same idea. Your heart should not be jealous of the sinners. And the pasuk finishes off, so obviously that's not talking about provoking them into a fight. That's talking about don't be jealous of them and think, you know what, they're being so successful, let me do the same thing as them. So we see from this thing that this story says that you are allowed to start up with the Rishai. So how is Rabbi Yitzchok saying you're not? The answer is, it depends whether you're talking about personal matters or things involving Hashem. When it comes to things involving Hashem, when it comes to things involving Yiddishkeit, then you start up with them if necessary. When it comes to Milady Day, when it comes to your own personal affairs, if you see that the guy's Misachek Aslai, don't start up with him. The Iboyisem, or Hoba Hoba Milady Day, another possibility is both of them are talking about your own personal matters. V'leikasha, Hoba Tzadik Gomer, Hoba Tzadik She'enei Gomer. You could be talking about a Tzadik Gomer versus She'enei Gomer. So a Tzadik Gomer, in other words, is guaranteed success that the Eibishter will be on his side no matter what, and he'll be able to win out over the Rosha. But a Tzadik Shein and Gomer, where after all, you know, we have in Tanya, that a Tzadik Shein and Gomer still has a trace of Ra within him, so therefore he may not necessarily be successful against the Rosha. As we see, the Amar of Huna, my Dichtiv, what does it mean, a Pasuk The Navi Chavakuk complains to Hashem, Lama Sabit Boigdim, why are you looking on about the disloyal ones? He's talking about he's talking about Nebuchadnezzar and his people who are going to come and destroy Eretz Yisrael and the Mikdash. How can you look on what they're doing and not do something about it? Tachrish, how can you be silent? Bevala Rosha Tzadik Mimenu, when the Rosha swallows up someone who's a greater Tzadik than him, implying Tzadik Mimenu Beleya, somebody who's a relative Tzadik, relative to him, he's a Tzadik, but not a complete Tzadik. Beleya, then sometimes the Rosha might swallow him up. Tzadik Gomer, any Beleya, but a complete Tzadik, the Rosha is never going to be able to swallow up. So therefore, so the Tzadik Gomer can go start up with the Rosha and not have to worry about it, but the Tzadik Shein and Gomer should hold back. The Iboy Sema, and a third possibility, Shoma, Sachakas Vaishaini, it's different when the Rosha has particularly good mazel right now, when the hour is fortunate for him, then you should hold off. So these are three different answers. Rabbi Yaakov Emden points out that all three of them are true. In other words, that when you have a tzaddik gomer can always start up with the Rosha. On the other hand, a tzaddik shein and gomer, when it's mili d'day or when Hashem is hachakas loy, should be careful.
So only those people are.
So we're not necessarily talking about tochecha. We might be talking about starting up with them, like for example, to show that their way of doing things is wrong. Yeah, it could involve giving them mussar if it's appropriate. It could be any of a lot of things. It could be so here, for example, I mean, you have. As one example, the Rebbe was never in favor of, used to have, it was popular during the 1950s and 60s to have interfaith debates. You'd have, like the old joke, a priest, a rabbi, and a minister, but instead of going into a bar, they'd be on stage and they'd be debating about the differences between their religions. And the Rebbe was never in favor of that kind of thing. With the exception, they say that the Rebbe allowed Emmanuel Shofat, Talav HaShalom, to do it. So this would be an example of these Garis B'Rashayim to start up with them and then, yeah. Okay, going back to talking about Rome, Oma Ula, Italia Shol Yavan. When we talk about Italia Shol Yavan, which is the area Rashi brings from the Gemara in Shabbos, the famous thing that it first came into being in Shlomo HaMelech's time when he married Bas Paroi, that Gavriel stuck a stick into the sea and eventually dirt gathered around it and it formed Italia Shol Yavan. Zek Krach Godol Shol Rome. Specifically, that area means the great city of Rome. It's 300 by 300 parsa in size. Now, of course, I mean, to a certain extent, this is meant to be metaphorical. The literal city of Rome is not 300 by 300. I mean, maybe the whole Italy is, but the Maharal with this and a lot of other Gemaras explains that these kinds of numbers are meant symbolically. They symbolize, in other words, the tremendous power of Rome. In other words, for example, 3 is the first number that you can really speak of as a whole number in the sense like you have, 1 is an individual thing, 2 is only a point, 3, 2 is only, is only a line, 3 is the first thing that you have an actual metzius over there, and 100 is, 10 times 10 also represents a certain shleimus. So it represents like Rome has everything that the world, everything that the gashmistic world has to offer can be found in Italia Shol Yavan, in Krach Godol Shol Rome. There are 365 marketplaces in it, equal to the number of days in the solar year, because we know the power of the goyim comes from the sun. Yisrael moinim l'levana, and then the goyim are moinim l'cha. So therefore, their city is represented, but therefore they have in their city a representation of the sun in that they have 365 markets. We had at the top of the Amud also that we said they had 365 military leaders. Same idea. So again, it doesn't mean that at any particular time you went to Rome, you would actually start counting the marketplaces and literally find 365. It means, in other words, that in Inyan there could be as many as 365, because that's what their metzius represents. They represent the ultimate in gashmis. The cotton shabakolam shall moichrei, the smallest of all of the marketplaces in Rome, is the one where they sell birds, and even that one, Bahavi Shishas Mil, even that one is 16 by 16 mil, which is about 10 miles by 10 miles. Umelach soyed b'chol yom be'echad mehen, the king of the Roman emperor, every day he eats, every day of the year, he eats in a different one of these marketplaces. V'hadorba, anybody who lives in the city of Rome, af b'shen el noledba, even though he wasn't born in the city, he came from someplace else, notor pras v'es ha-melech, he gets a present from the king. Or actually, the ba might mean in, not in the whole city of Rome, but in that particular street, in that particular marketplace. So in other words, let's say on this day, the king is visiting this and this marketplace. So anybody who lives there, even if he wasn't born there, gets on that day, they get a special present or a special stipend or whatever from the king. And anybody who was born in that area, even though he's not living there now, also also gets a present from the king. There are 3,000 bathhouses in Rome. The Romans in particular were very famous for their bathhouses. You have the Gemara and Shabbos, for example, where Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Yossi and Rabbi Shimon are talking about what the Romans have accomplished. And Rabbi Yossi and Rabbi Yehuda points out the Tiknu Shvakim, Tiknu Mechatzais, they made marketplaces, they made bathhouses. So therefore, all Gemara is pointing out those were the specialties of Rome, their marketplaces and their bathhouses. They have 500 windows to let the smoke outside beyond the city wall. In other words, it actually says this shows the chashivus of the place. They won't allow the smoke from all these bathhouses, all the wood and coal and whatever they had to burn there to darken the city walls. Instead, they had special windows and things set up to be able to direct the smoke outside the city. Sidoi Echad Yam, one side of Italia Shoyovan is surrounded by the sea, but Sidoi Echad Horomukvois, another one is surrounded, it has mountains and hills. Sidoi Echad Mechitza Shobarzel, one side is an iron wall, but Sidoi Echad Chosis Sumutsula, and the fourth side is gravel and depths, meaning swamps. So again, you know, to a certain extent, it's referring to the Gashmiastic city of Rome, and the Gashmiastic city of Rome does have the sea on one side and the mountains of Italy on another side, and so on and so forth. But in Etzim, we're talking about the Ruchniastic of Rome, so to speak, like the anti-Yerushalayim, that it has these things, that it has these qualities, it has the ultimate in Gashmius as compared to Yerushalayim is the ultimate in Ruchnius, and it has these and it can be described in that way as being surrounded by these various things. One idea is Marshall says that the point that the Gemara wants to stress. If you see there's so much riches and power by those who violate and go against Hashem, how much more so there's stored up for the tzaddikim that Hashem has to provide for us. There's also, for example, when we say, for example, that one side of it is Horomuk voice, the Horomuk voice often refers to the Obis and Imahus. So it means, in other words, part of their greatness comes from the fact that, after all, Esav, Edom, is descended from some of the Obis and Imahus, from Abraham and Sarah and Yitzchak and Rivka. So that gives them a certain amount of their greatness. On the other hand, they have Mechitza Shel Barzel, was an iron wall separating them from Elikos. And therefore, they have all the good in Gashmias, but they don't have the Ruchmias, and so forth. Okay. Mishnah says, Koruas a Megillah ba'Adar Rishon. Suppose that they read the Megillah in Adar Aleph in a leap year, v'nis Abra Hashana, and then it ended up being a leap year. Now, in those times, that could easily happen because the Sanhedrin might not even decide to make an Ibur Yor until after Purim. The halacha is they're allowed to until the end of Adar, until Choftas Adar. So that could conceivably happen. Nowadays, that we have a Lo HaKavua, it could happen. Let's say, for example, if Kehillah didn't realize whatever the printer has printed them the wrong calendar, and they didn't realize that it's an Ibur Yor. So then, Kodinos of Adar Sheni, they have to read the Megillah again in Adar Sheni. And the Mishnah continues, Ein bein Adar Rishon la'Adar Sheni. There's no difference between Adar Rishon and Adar Sheni. Ela kriyas haMegillah matanas levyonim, with the exception of you read the Megillah only in Adar Sheni, and you do matanas levyonim only in Adar Sheni. So the Gemara starts off, hold the Indian Seder Parashias. So the implication seems to be that as far as the four Parashias, which we're going to learn about in more detail at the end of Or Masechta, Shkolim and Zohar and the rest of them, Zeb is Zeh Shobin. It sounds like they're the same thing. In other words, if you read them in Adar Aleph, you don't have to reread them in Adar Beis. The problem with that is, Mani Masnissin, then who is our Mishnah like? Loi Tanakama, Veloi Rabbi Eliezer Rabbi Yossi, Veloi Rabbi Shimon Gamliel. It doesn't seem to go like any of the Tanoim who addressed this point. The Tanya, we learn in a Braisa, Koruas HaMegillah Ba'Adar Arishin. Suppose they read the Megillah in Adar Aleph, and it's Abra Ashana, and then it became an Ibriyar. Koruas HaBa'Adar Asheni, so they have to reread it in Adar Sheni. Shekol Mitzvahs Shenoigas Basheni Noigas Basheni, because all the mitzvahs that apply during Adar Sheni also apply in Adar Rishon, chutz mi mikra Megillah, with the exception of mikra Megillah. So it sounds like then the Tanakama then is saying that the Dalad Parashiyos is b'diavad. If you read them in Adar Aleph, then it's fine. Rabbi Eliezer, Rabbi Yossi says you wouldn't even have to read the Megillah in Adar Sheni at all. Shekol mitzvahs shenogas b'sheni nogas b'dushin, because all mitzvahs without exception that can apply in Adar Sheni equally well apply in Adar Rishon, and therefore if they read the Megillah in Adar Rishon, then that's fine. Rabbi Shimon Gamliel over Mishum Rabbi Yossi af po noisa ba'Adar Sheni. Rabbi Shimon Gamliel says in the name of Rabbi Yossi that you do also read the Megillah in Adar Sheni. Shekol mitzvahs shenogas b'sheni ein nogas b'dushin, because all the mitzvahs that apply in the second one, not all of them apply in the first one. But the shoven behesbit of Retainus shasunim mazer b'zer, all the chachamim agree that they are equal as far as that hesbit and tainus are also on Purim cotton and Shushan Purim cotton, just as on Purim and Shushan Purim. So, first of all, before we figure out who our Mishnah is like, we have to figure out Reb Shimon Gamliel and the Tanakama. Isn't Reb Shimon Gamliel saying effectively the same thing as the Tanakama? The Tanakama said that you have to reread the Megillah and Adar Sheni. Reb Shimon Gamliel is saying the same thing. The answer is Omer Papa say the Parshias, and that's it. Reb Papa says the machlokus between them is as far as the Dalad Parshias. The Tanakama sovel lachatchila b'sheni. The Tanakama holds the lachatchila. You should be reading them in Adar Sheni. The e over b'rishon over everything that you should do in Adar Sheni. If you did it in Adar Rishon, b'dieved is fine. Barring Mikra Megillah, with the exception of Mikra Megillah, the afagav the koto b'rishon koto b'sheni. That even if they read it the first Adar, they have to reread the second Adar. Rabbi Eliezer, Rabbi Yossi, Savra, Afilu Mikra Megillah, Lachatchila Berishin. Rabbi Eliezer, Rabbi Yossi holds that even Mikra Megillah, you could Lachatchila do it during Adar Rishin, as the Gemara is going to point out that he holds that Purim Bechlal is an Adar Rishin when there's two Adars. Rabbi Shimon Gamliel, Savra, Afilu Seda Parshias. Rabbi Shimon Gamliel, Savra, Afilu Seda Parshias, E Koto Berishin, Koto Bashin. Rabbi Shimon Gamliel holds even the Seda Parshias, if they read them in Adar Rishin, then they still have to reread them in Adar Shin. So now that we understand that, and we said that our Mishnah is saying that only Mikra Megillah has to be done over again in Adar Sheni, but the Dalad Parshi is not. Well then, Mani, who is our Mishnah like? E Tanakama Kasha Matonis. If it's going to be according to the Tanakama, the problem is he didn't say anything about Matonis Lev Yonim having to be done during Adar Sheni. He only mentioned Kriyas Megillah. Our Mishnah also mentioned Matonis Lev Yonim. You can't say our Mishnah is like Rabbi Eliezer, Rabbi Yossi, because then Mikra Megillah wouldn't work either. He says you could do it in Adar Aleph. And Lachatchila, in fact, you should do it in Adar Aleph. And according to Rabbi Shimon Gamliel, the problem is the Seder Parshias, where he's saying that you would have to read them again in Adar Sheni, and our Mishnah is implying that not. The answer is La'olam Tanakama. You could answer that our Mishnah is like the Tanakama of that Lysa. The answer is when the Braisa says Mikra Megillah, it also automatically includes Matonas Lev Yonim because those are interdependent. We learned the other day, a Neim Shalaniim Nesuris, the Mikra Megillah, the eyes of the Aniim are raised by Mikra Megillah. They're looking forward to getting their Matonas Lev Yonim. So whenever you lay Megillah is when you do Matonas Lev Yonim. So the Tanakama of the Braisa didn't have to mention that detail because it's assumed that they go together. So therefore, our Mishnah could go like that. Another possibility, we could say that our Mishnah goes like Reb Shimon Gamliel. We could say that our Mishnah is missing words. But what it means to say is, it doesn't mean Adar Rishon and Adar Sheni as a whole. It means specifically as far as the 14th of Adar Rishon and the 14th of Adar Sheni, there's no difference Ela Mikra Megillah or Matanas Lev Yonim. Implying all the Mishnah is implying is that you should know as far as Hesped and Tainis, they're the same thing. Just like you can't do Hesped and Tainis on Purim, so you can't do it on Purim cotton. The Seder Parshias, we're not addressing. The Mishnah is not addressing that difference at all because not focusing on the whole Adar Rishon and the whole Adar Sheni, only on the 14th of one versus on the 14th of the other. And the Gemara says, Amr Abkiba Oven, Amr Abyechan, and Hilchasak Reb Shimon Gamliel, Sha'amr Mishum Reb Yais. So the Halacha is like Reb Shimon Gamliel. So therefore, you do have to read the Seder Parshias in Adar Sheni if you read them in Adar Aleph. Now, we're saying, by the way, that you don't do Hesped B'tainis on your Dalid or Tesvav of Adar Rishon either. So that brings up the question, what about a Chos and Tala if they're getting married on Purim Cotton or Shushan Purim Cotton? Should they fast? So there are, in fact, poskim that say based on this that not. On the other hand, the tainus of a chosin and kala is a very stringent kind of tainus. We say it's not like a regular optional tainus. There's much more of a chiyuv to it than there would be a regular optional tainus. And in fact, therefore, there are poskim who say that you would. It's book that in Tafshin Yud Aleph there was such a kvius. It was the first year of the Rebbe's Nasius, and it was an Ibro year. A fellow Hirschel Chitrik was getting married, and he asked what to do. He was told that Abanim of that time told him to fast, and then the Rebbe told him essentially, well, since you were told that, then go ahead and do that. So he and his kala did. I myself also, my wife and I also got married on Shushan Purim Cotton, and I asked around the same. They told me that, and so we also did. So that seems to be at least in Lubavitch that the minhag is that in fact you do. But regular tainism, we're talking about if let's say it was an optional tainus for whatever reason, then you wouldn't do it on your dollar to svav other rishon either. Okay, everyone. Bye.